Hey everybody, it's been a 007 back for another 10-minute movie review with what is undoubtedly the big release of the first quarter of this year, and that is Dune Part 2. A film that was originally meant to come out, I think, last November, but was pushed back by the studio because the actors were all on strike and could not have promoted the film. And evidently, this film needs to do really well so that Denis Villeneuve can be tempted back to potentially direct Dune Messiah or part three of this epic franchise reboot. So I know this film has been getting incredible praise. And I just want to point out that I did watch this in IMAX, perfect seating position. So I gave it its best shot. And I would say that Dune Part 2 is probably about as good a film as one can make about Frank Herbert's iconic religio sci-fi book. The flaws I found in this film are mostly down to some of the stuff that I find a little bit distasteful and uninspiring in the source material. I think it has a pretty superficial embrace of Middle Eastern and North African culture. Its female characters are almost entirely reduced to breeding vessels. I think that I am probably not the target demographic for the book or the film. But having said all that, I think Denis Villeneuve is an incredibly talented director. I love his Blade Runner 2049. And I think he's taken the source material and created two films now of really arresting visual beauty, harnessed to a stunning score. I think Greg Fraser's IMAX cinematography here is so beautiful. The production design of these beautiful rippling sand dunes, it really puts us deep into that world building of Arrakis. And Hans Zimmer, well, he's at his finest, right? He loves rhythm, he loves drums. So this, you know, the sandworm commanding drums, the rock guitars, the menacing prophecy reciting choirs, the ethnic music all interwoven. It's an amazing score. And I think that what I would say about this film is that the stuff that Denis Villeneuve cares about, which is visual, spectacle, and score, is superlative. It's fantastic. The stuff that he doesn't care about so much, which is script, narrative, performance, I think is really weak. And therefore, I am kind of like a 3.5 star out of 5 reviewer of this film. So to take you back to where this film is in the canon, as this installment opens, we're just days after part one ended. So I think it does serve you to watch part one before watching this. Paul Atreides and his mother, Lady Jessica, have survived the massacre of their house on the desert planet of Arrakis. Paul has proven himself a fearsome warrior to the indigenous freemen, some of who think he is their long-awaited messiah. And this delights Lady Jessica and Atreides' loyalist Gurney Halleck, who believe that the Fremen, if they can be harnessed, will be a really powerful fighting force for House Atreides to sort of take back what was stolen from them by the Harkonnen family. But, you know, Paul, his lover, Chani, kind of has it right. She's like, you know, these prophecies, they're just stories being told to control the Fremen, and she doesn't buy any of it. So the narrative arc is really, it's powered in this film by Paul having to choose between those two sides. Is he going to be swayed by his prophetic dreams of devastating interstellar war and therefore reject being a messiah? Or is he going to exploit the Fremen, as his mother and Gurney want him to do, and take epic imperial revenge on the Harkonnens and seize the imperial throne? So is Paul going to be effectively not a messiah and just a naughty boy? Or is he going to seize the throne? As I said before, there's so much to love in how Denis Villeneuve brings this to the screen. He knows how to create an epic landscape and involve us in a world. He very wisely gives the sandworms the Jaws shark treatment. In other words, they're barely seen. They're epic. We see their impact. We see the ripples in the sand. But they're very much sort of things that we see skimming the surface of the sand with someone riding them. They're not kind of comedy visuals that take us out of the reality of the film. And the production and costume design of the entire world, actually. But in particular, we go to the Harkonnen's home planet here. And, you know, even the character design of the Baron and the Nar Baron are very arresting. The makeup that you will have no doubt seen of Austin Butler, latterly Elvis now as the Nar Baron, it's just really amazing. He's an incredibly menacing Fade Rautha. So it looks amazing. It sounds amazing. Let's now get into the story. For me, the performances veer from mediocre to weak, with one exception, which I'll get to. I found something almost comical in Timothée Chalamet's petulance as Paul. Maybe it's not his fault, because I think he is a good actor. I think it's just the narrative construction, maybe. At some point, it got into my head that Life of Brian, he's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy. And once you see the film through that lens, the gourd, we are following the gourd. There's no turning back. It just really undermined the film for me. I also found there to be zero screen chemistry between Timothée Chalamet's Paul and Zendaya's Chani, which is odd because they seem to be constantly low-key flirting on the red carpet and like really good mates. But just on screen, that relationship lies flat for me. And therefore, when Paul makes his final choice and Chani has to take the consequences of that, which should be heartbreaking, it just kind of wasn't for me, which I think is a real problem with the film. I think Christopher Walken is hopelessly miscast as the Emperor. He totally brought me out of the film. He cannot act. He just does his typical unique, crazy accent, and you're just immediately in comedy world. It's just such a bad choice. So when it comes to performances, for me, the only person who really stood out was Javier Bardem as Stilgar in this really incredibly chilling performance of a guy who we meet in part one as, a rebel leader, someone who's an incredible fighter, an incredible leader, but he just is increasingly overtaken by religious fervor, and that is rightly petrifying. And I think Javier Bardem gets that completely right. As I said before, I suspect that performances aren't really what interest Villeneuve. He is all about spectacle. This does also lead to very weird choices around narrative, which are either going to bother you or not, I think, depending on how much you care about a potential third film and how much you care about the books. I think most obviously, Villeneuve's choice not to allow the narrative of this film to unravel over several years is problematic, partly because it felt to me like Paul's journey from sort of young pup, quote unquote, to, imperial leader had taken place over a few weeks. Like, is it really that easy to seize power? And also, how is this all going to impact the timeline around his little sister Alia, who was born, not born, she is sentient in the womb? In this film, she's always seen as a fetus talking through her mother, Lady Jessica. But Paul is seeing her in his dreams as a grown woman, which is kind of how we see her in the books, right, as a teenager. And I kind of feel like if they make a third film, how are they going to get around that? So I think the choice to make this film part two feel like it takes place very quickly is problematic in multiple ways. I also disagree with the fact that Denis Villeneuve has minimized the influence of the Guild on the story. I think that's also potentially going to be problematic for any third installment. And what it does is it pushes everything onto the Bene Gesserit cult. Like they're seen as the real proactive plotters and schemers. And I'm not sure the way they're depicted in the film can hold that narrative weight. But I guess, the biggest macro issue, the overall issue that I have with both the books and the film is that there's no one to really root for. You have, on the one hand, this decrepit emperor who seems flaccid and pointless. Then there are the comically evil and therefore uninteresting because they're pantomime villain Harkonnens. The Bene Gesserit are nuts and seem to have no end game. It's like, okay, all you do for centuries is plot, but you seem to, I mean, like you don't seem to be very good at it. But we're meant to be scared of you because you do have some mystical voodoo powers. The Fremen are religious extremists and depicted in a way that you could more or less find insulting, depending on how you want to look at it. And Paul is a self-acknowledged harbinger of mass genocide. Wonderful. It's like watching Succession, but without the comedy swearing. I find it very hard. I love complex drama. I love characters that are grey, that are not black and white. But I think you need to have something that you're rooting for. And I think for people who love Dune, maybe they love it because they root for Paul against themselves. Like they know that he's problematic, but they can't get help but to get swept up in his journey. I don't find him as depicted here as charismatic or interesting, and therefore I think that's a real problem for me in getting into this film. But like I say, it looks phenomenal. Go see it on IMAX. Just let it wash over you. Just let the visuals and the sound wash over you. And that is enough to get you to 3 or 4 stars out of 5. It just isn't for me a 5-star film. That said, I'm sure many of you are going to disagree with me, so feel free to leave a comment at my YouTube channel, bina007.com. You can also find me on Threads on X. Happy to discuss it further. Dune Part 2 has a running time of 166 minutes and is rated PG-13. It is currently on global release. Thank you so much for listening.